Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a September 9, 2009 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us tonight is Dale Furlong, a retired rocket scientist in California. Dale, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you with us. Now, perhaps we can begin with your background that led you to introduce a technology that would have helped to clean up the smog from vehicle exhaust. You are a retired rocket scientist, is that not so?
Yes.
So how is it you actually got into the aerospace industry?
I got into the aerospace industry right out of college, and ended up working on rocket propulsion and primarily control systems, but rockets in general. But and then I decided to, there was too much military involvement. It bothered my conscience a bit, so I was looking for other other ways to use what I knew, and ended up with a friend of us starting a new company, and I promoted the idea of using oxygen and hydrogen and in cars. I guess primarily to talk myself into a new job. It worked. He was quite interested, and we jumped in there and tried to work the whole thing out.
Now, this was in the late 60s, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was in, in like 1967.
Okay. Now, there was another technology that had to do with solid waste disposal that you were working on with the same company, is that correct? Or?
Yeah, that was the same company. We actually, initially, we were kind of looking around for what to work on, and the oxygen and hydrogen was one of the first things we looked at. But in parallel with that, we were looking at solid waste disposal too, trying to work out the economics of it.
And the idea being to convert solid waste, or actually landfill waste, right, into what?
Well, as a alternative to landfill, we're going to use it as a fuel to make electricity.
So in other words, this is a giant machine that would turn household waste and so on into burnable fuel to generate electricity.
Well, actually, solid waste is primarily paper, like 95% of it is a combustible fuel as it is. We were just worked out how to use it and trying to work the economics out of it.
Of course, you're referring to back then. Now it's probably more plastic than paper, perhaps, huh?
I doubt it. Even back then, plastic content was, it's been quite a while ago, I think it was in 5 to 10%, whereas paper and that sort of thing, cardboard, was 75%.
So you were trying to kill two birds with one stone by eliminating a landfill and at the same time generating electricity with a system that didn't produce a lot of pollution, right?
Exactly. The primary motivation for making electricity was to have an income, to help reduce the cost of disposing of it.
Okay. And so you proved that this was a viable way of dealing with solid waste.
Some of it worked, some of it didn't work. Well, the electric power generation aspect of it, we discovered we were way ahead of ourselves. We ran into significant technical problems. However, at the same time, we worked out many of the techniques that are still used to recycle things like aluminum and metal and glass, sort of thing. That was all, I think, pretty much both a pioneering work and quite successful.
In other words, how to separate those materials on a conveyor-type system as the trash is fed into it.
Uh-huh.
So you guys were some of the first ones to try to identify how to deal with all that varied stuff, huh?
Exactly.
So then the effort to try to improve the combustion of fossil fuel in a car, in an internal combustion engine, that was an earlier effort.
Well, actually, our effort wasn't to improve the combustion of fossil fuels. It was actually to make a vehicle that would burn oxygen and hydrogen. And we got the oxygen and hydrogen by electrolysis or using electric power and water.
Okay. That was one aspect of your work. The other aspect, the HIOX, was actually like an oxygen injection with fossil fuel, wasn't it?
No. Well, we did work in... I'm trying to remember what the names are. We did work on a project that was kind of an offshoot of the basic project was called HIOX. And the offshoot was where we used the liquid oxygen to inject that along with fossil fuels, the objective being to eliminate the generation of nitric oxides, a key component of smog.
And you were accomplishing that by not allowing any atmospheric air into the combustion chamber, is that right?
Exactly, right.
So you were metering oxygen from a tank of oxygen on board and then administering that into the intake along with the fossil fuel, the gasoline or diesel or whatever.
Yeah, it was a diesel in this case.
Okay. And then you found it necessary to use water injection along with that to cool it down?
Yeah, because if you use a pure oxygen, the combustion temperature is up like 5,000 degrees. And so we injected water in order to... We basically recycled the water. We recovered it from the exhaust and re-injected. The key there was just to keep down the temperature.
Okay. And what did you notice happened to fuel economy with this scenario?
As near as we could figure out, it looked pretty promising. The output of the engine of a typical size engine was much higher than it would have been using air. And just the physical size of the motor helped increase the fuel economy. And it was basically more efficient because in a normal engine, you're using it to pump air, whereas we were using we carried the, as I remember, we had the liquid, we used liquid oxygen, but evaporated it and allowed it to pressurize itself by the evaporation. Hence, we didn't have to pump it up to pressure. It went into the engine under its own pressure. And that helped, make it more efficient.
And did you pass it through the regular intake manifold, or did you have to use a specially designed injection?
No, it was through the regular intake manifold and intake valves and all. And then the fuel was injected like a diesel.
Okay, and you just didn't allow any atmospheric air into that manifold?
No. It was pure oxygen.
So thereby eliminating that 78% nitrogen content of atmospheric air?
Yes. And the fact that the nitrogen wasn't present in the combustion process eliminated the generation of nitric oxides.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you noticed recently that the Shell oil company has been boasting of putting nitrogen in their gasoline?
I have.
What do you think of that?
That's really for a different purpose, and I don't really understand what they're trying to get at. I think they're trying to eliminate buildup in the combustion in the engine, the deposits from the bad things in the gasoline. But I'm not sure. I don't know. It makes little sense to me.
Yeah, it sounds like it's more hype than anything, huh?
Yeah. Shell does that there. Well, I guess everybody does.
Yeah, I think so. So let's get back to the other system that wasn't just oxygen boosting or whatever, but what actually involved the electrolysis of water and then running the vehicle on the hydrogen and oxygen from electrolysis water.
Yes.
So how did that idea come about?
Well, the key problem with using hydrogen in a vehicle is the ability to carry enough to use. Hydrogen is of course extremely light, and there's really two ways. Well, there's several ways to do it. One is you use liquid hydrogen, and which of course the aerospace industry uses, but hydrogen is as a liquid is extremely cold, and has a lot of severe problems because of that. And our general thinking was that wasn't very practical. But the other way is just to pressurize the hydrogen and carry it at high pressure, and we elected to go that route. And the electrolysis has an interesting advantage in that the electrolysis process doesn't really care what the pressure is. The electric current will separate the two gases no matter almost how the limit is what the pressure is. So we use that just to generate the gases at high pressure and then put it in the vehicle. As I remember, we were looking at carrying it at 5,000 PSI. And that it seemed to be a doable thing. I don't think we ever got far enough to say absolutely that it was. There are problems. There's problems with safety, the fact that you're carrying a high-pressure combustible gas. Those seem to be manageable. It's a fair challenge to make a high-pressure tank that is both safe and light enough to carry in the vehicle. And we were working pretty hard on that. That was really In those days, we were using an aluminum tank that had fiberglass over it. And of course, today it'd be a lot more feasible using a carbon fiber. But it looked feasible, and you know, with the fiberglass, and we were using a series of small tanks in order to both address the safety problem and also to be able to fit it into the vehicle a little bit better.
Okay. And I understand that you did pull some patents on this technology.
Yeah, we had, my memory's a little vague here, but we had a patent on, well, I don't remember any specific patent on the basic, you know, basically the idea of using oxygen and hydrogen is pretty fundamental, and as far as I know, there's nothing patentable there. We did patent the idea of using the one we talked about before, just liquid oxygen to eliminate the nitrous oxide.
Yeah, I'm actually finding on the internet, doing a Google search of your name with the word patent brings up patent number 3,550,791. It's called Materials Storage and Conveying Assembly.
materials.
Yeah, apparently
that had to do with the solid waste thing.
Oh, is that right?
It sounds okay. Like it. I don't remember. it would have been a. Of course, a company patent. This company was, you know, quite successful. We ended up by developing a fairly unique combustion process for burning, we started out burning solid waste, but it turned out to be quite useful in the lumber industry. They have what they call yard waste, that's wood that drops off the trees while they're handling them. And we ended up by one of the big lumber companies bought our whole company out just to get that aspect of it, that combustion process. However, that unfortunately, they were not interested in pursuing any of the other things that we were working on, like these, you know, the Hyox and all that. So that kind of brought the whole thing to an end.
Yes. Yeah, there are actually several references to patents associated with your name. One of them is an emission control process for combustion flue gases. A fluid bed reactor preheating method and apparatus.
Yeah, those were both associated with this thing we called a fluidized bed combustor, which is a fairly common item, but the thing we had a patent on was how to feed solid waste into it, and that's what that patent was about.
Well, I think it's encouraging to know that people like yourself, even back in the 60s, before the price of fuel went up in the 70s, when suddenly a bunch of people were interested in stretching their fuel, that you and others who had experience in rocket propulsion systems and so on, could see that other gases could be used in a way that would reduce pollution and perhaps even be more efficient.
Yeah, that that even in the 60s, well, at that time we were beating the drums about the fact that fossil fuels are going to run out, and it was well known that they were, and the air pollution problems were getting worse and worse, and something needed to be done about it. But unfortunately, almost the same things are true today.
Yeah, that's true. And the fact that your company was bought out for another purpose, and then the good work that you were doing was basically shelved, I think that's been repeated over and over again under different circumstances.
I'm sure it has, yeah.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to share this bit of history that reveals what for most people is a previously unknown aspect of the work of many sincere scientists around the country and even in other countries, that we're attempting to introduce something better for mankind to use in the way of fuel and to burn our fuel more intelligently. If we have to burn something, do so intelligently. And I think it's good for people to know that efforts such as that of you and your partners have been attempted in previous decades.
Well, yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, it gets involved in all kind of politics and everything. For example, this effort we were talking about, the HAOCs, are we? We finally got a member of our board of directors that had some good friends in the auto industry, fairly high. Well, in fact, a vice president level in the auto industry, and we presented the idea to one of the big three back in, that must have been in the late, it was still in the late 60s. Actually, I wasn't at the meeting myself, but the basic idea that we went away with is they told us that they weren't about to do anything that the government didn't force them to do, as long as the government wasn't forcing them to work on oxygen and hydrogen, they weren't going to do it.
Yeah, and now that the government owns GM.
Well, it wasn't GM.
Yeah, but wasn't that something that you would never have dreamed of, that GM would go belly up and the government would have to bail it out?
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of the Tucker automobile.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, well, there's a perfect example of how all three American automakers, from my understanding, were opposed to the nuances or the innovations of the Tucker, and they actually fought to put him out of business so that they wouldn't have to compete with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, you can pretty much say the thing of that for Kaiser, too, and later on DeLorean.
Yeah. So it appears that at this time, though, here in 2009, there are a few automakers springing up, local automakers in the U.S., similar to the scenario from 100 years ago when there were car manufacturing shops on almost every street corner in big cities, you know. There were hundreds of automakers in the U.S. around the turn of the century. And here we are seeing such cars as the Tesla being made around the San Francisco Bay Area, and several other electric vehicles, as well as some internal combustion engine powered vehicles that are using some innovative technology, such as the Ron Motors Scorpion being made in Texas that actually uses an onboard hydrogen production by electrolysis to supplement the fossil fuel.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
So it could be that your work and that of others like you has actually been part of the process, you know.
There's a lot of basic things here that I'm sure other people not only have thought of, but also there's good reason to pursue the use of other kinds of fuels. And I think we're gradually beginning to see that being done.
Well, I think it's all part of a learning process that we've had to go back, because we know very little about these things due to circumstances like such as what happened to your company. These ideas have not been successfully, you know, brought to fruition. So a person has to go back in their patent searches and whatnot and find patents such as the ones you pulled for Hyox and learn something from them.
Well, we hope they help.
Well, I do appreciate your being a guest on the program, Dale, and I've enjoyed talking to you about various matters along these lines, and I'm sure that our listeners have also enjoyed hearing your observations on these things.
Okay, well, I'm happy to have the opportunity, and we hope it does somebody some good.
Okay, thanks so much, and have a good evening.
You're welcome, and thank you.